Welcome back to the Athenaeum Review podcast. We're speaking today with Ambassador Jorge Alberto Lozoya about globalization and the Baroque. What about, correct me if I'm wrong, I know that in many, you know, especially perhaps during the Cold War, with the United States policies in the Cold War, and I believe in Mexico and in many countries, there were also many people who would say, well, this is just, kind of Yankee imperialism. The United States wants to spread its Coca-Cola and McDonald's everywhere. And, you know, we're afraid that if we open up to the superpower, that the United States is just going to dominate us. And so
what's your doubt? What's your question?
Oh, my question is,
or your concern?
What you would say to someone, or if someone in a smaller country? I mean, I know you said don't be afraid of, or be afraid of. Watch out for being afraid, you said. My question is, to someone in a smaller country who says, "Well, I'm afraid that if we accommodate globalization, that the superpowers like the United States and China will just dominate our country and our culture." What do you say?
That's nonsense.
Nonsense, yes.
North America,
yeah,
is today Canada,
yeah,
the United States of America, and Mexico.
Yeah.
We have succeeded in integrating our trade and,
yeah,
our economies.
Yeah.
We are now North Americans and Latin Americans,
yeah,
at the same time. Yeah. Just think of the size,
yeah,
of our economy from Alaska to Cancun.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you come from small European country,
yeah,
just the size of Mexico, and we're the smallest of the three countries of,
yeah,
Canada, the US, and Mexico. The size of Mexico.
Yeah.
The distance between Tijuana in Baja California and Cancun,
yeah,
in the Yucatan Peninsula is the equivalent to the distance between Lisbon in Portugal and Warsaw in Poland.
Yeah.
That's just Mexico.
Yeah. Yeah.
So think of the economies and the trade of the three of us together.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
It's hard.
We're a superpower.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know the volume of legal trade between Mexico and US?
I don't.
$1 million per minute.
It's amazing.
$1 million per minute.
Yeah.
The legal.
And much of it comes through here in Texas, yeah.
Well, incredibly big.
Yeah.
And by the way, China is now the second trade partner of Mexico.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes? So what I'm trying to say is that global interaction,
yeah,
which is not the first time that it happened.
Yeah.
It happened in the Baroque period.
Yeah.
Can you imagine when men and women discovered that you could navigate a round planet?
Yeah.
Damn it! Wasn't that fantastic?
Yeah. Yeah.
And they didn't know that that planet, that sphere, was moving.
Yeah, yeah.
Now we know that is, and it's moving very fast, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, but we can go from north to south, and now we fly.
Yeah.
By the way, people learn flying in the Baroque, the balloons.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Huh? The balloon was the first flying machine.
Yeah.
And it's the Baroque period.
Yeah.
Okay. So this global communication, action, trade, universities, everything. Even crime is global.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Has nothing against national interests.
Yeah.
It's two categories.
Yeah.
The nations of the 21st century are going to be global.
Yeah, yeah.
They already are.
Yeah,
yeah. Take Netflix.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh? We in Mexico now, in my small town, well, my small, beautiful city.
Yeah.
We see the best, newest American films.
Yeah.
The same day that they are presented in Hollywood.
Yeah. And people here can watch Roma.
Of course.
For example.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. And we buy in the same malls, in the sense that we know that vegetables are here and the cheese is there and all that.
Yeah.
On the entire planet.
Yeah.
I remember when the first Russians that traveled to the Western Hemisphere after the end of the Soviet Union were absolutely astonished by Mexican supermarkets.
Yeah.
One famous young philosopher, he cried.
Yeah.
In a Mexico City supermarket.
Yeah.
He said, "My God, what is this?"
Yeah.
Well, it's free trade.
Yeah.
That's why then Gorbachev said that the big failure of the Soviet Union was that there was not soap.
Yeah.
Yeah. To wash yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Mexicans, since the very beginning of times, we bathe with Colgate Palmolive.
Yeah.
We call it Colgate Palmolive. But it's Colgate Palmolive. Yeah. And we have always driven Fords, Chryslers.
Yeah.
There's no Quetzalcoatl cars. You see what I mean?
Right.
Global dreams of sharing are growing.
Yeah.
Please go to Shanghai.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go to the malls in Shanghai and now in Moscow.
Yeah. Yeah.
The malls in Moscow, my dear friends, please go.
Yeah.
The same trades of Europe and of America that you enjoy in Amsterdam or in Paris.
Yeah.
When the Soviet Union disappeared, many Europeans feared that the Russians were going to invade Western Europe. They were going to move as illegal immigrants. They didn't.
Yeah.
They, of course, went shopping, went to Paris, and then went back to Russia.
Yeah.
The Russians are in Russia. Yeah. Please go to Siberia.
Yeah.
Siberia is nothing to do with Dr. Zhivago.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic, like Texas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, fear is an invention of people who are not properly trained to understand the alien side of civilization.
Yeah.
That's why we diplomats and military experts and religious authorities in the world have to do.
Yeah.
When a Mexican goes to, I'll give you a story of a famous Hungarian young, like you, historian who came to visit Puebla not long ago. And I took him to the cathedral. We've been talking about the cathedral on a Sunday. It happened to be Sunday morning, and I took him. And he saw the cathedral full of people coming out from Mass.
Yeah.
And he started crying. He asked me, "Can I sit down?" I said, "Yes." I know that Hungarians are Catholic.
Yeah.
And he sat and said, "I can't believe this. In this beautiful, rich city of today, everybody's coming to Mass."
Yeah.
I said, "Yes, what's the problem?" And he said something incredible. He said, "In Europe, people don't go to church anymore."
Yeah, yeah.
"Can I call my wife? Because I have to tell her." Yeah. Crying.
Wow.
Isn't that
it's amazing.
Quite shocking?
Yeah.
And of course, Mexicans were coming out from church
laughing.
Yeah. As usual.
Yeah, yeah.
You see, the two largest Catholic countries in the world today are Brazil and Mexico.
Okay.
And the Pope is Argentinian.
Yes, yes, yes.
So it's how is the time of Latin America in the Catholic Church.
It is, yeah.
Yeah? So it's, all these things are not to be afraid of.
Yeah, yeah. It's an amazing, that's quite a story.
I was in Paris with a very important group of intellectuals telling them this part of the consolidation of Latin American presence in the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And a young philosopher, very French, who was listening to me at the table, it was a dinner table, was very serious. And I asked him, how do you react to what I just said about the very big presence of Latin American countries in the Catholic Church? And you know what he said? "Well, it shows the decadence of the Catholic Church."
What does that mean?
You can imagine my reaction.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it here.
Yeah.
At the end, he had to apologize. And he said, you are completely nuts.
Yeah.
It's a new era.
Yeah.
No? Is it dangerous that the Pope is an Argentinian? That Brazilians and Mexicans are running wrong?
Yeah.
The Vatican, is that bad? Why?
Right.
You see, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
The same is happening with Islam.
Yeah.
The Jewish identity is stronger than ever. I was ambassador, as you said, both to Palestine and to Israel.
Yeah.
Mm? And the Chinese, who don't have a religion.
Yeah.
Confucianism is not a religion.
Yeah.
No? It's not even a philosophy. The word philosophy is Western.
Right.
They simply enjoy this, no? By the way, Confucianism is back.
Yeah.
It's an extremely interesting phenomenon. Millions and millions of copies of books and TV shows are being produced on the revival and the rethinking of Confucian thought in China.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Amazing. Yeah? You know, that reminds me of something else you mentioned in your lecture, which I thought was very inspiring. Talking about the children or the youth orchestra from the local community. And I think you said something in Puebla, something to the effect that, you know, Beethoven is ours, Shakespeare is ours, all of these great artists and creators, you know, it's not only for Germans to listen to Bach or whatever, it's this inheritance that can be shared across these nations, and this image of these children brilliantly playing this music, I thought was so inspiring. But I wanted to ask, you know, some people will say, well, you know, instead of, we shouldn't be studying all of these dead white males, you know, don't study Beethoven, you know, only, we should study something that only belongs to us. I mean, do you encounter these kinds of questions?
Of course, I laugh.
Yeah.
You know how many children
in
China
are
taking private classes of Western piano?
Yeah.
How many Chinese children are taking today private lessons of Western piano? You know? 35 million.
Wow.
So relax.
So those families aren't concerned that this music isn't Chinese.
Well,
they don't see
it's worldwide.
Yeah.
Not only soap and cars and airplanes and Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Yeah.
Culture is also universal.
Yeah.
And for Americans, I mean, you and I, as citizens of the Western Hemisphere, it's absolute essential for us. We have been playing a violin or Mozart since we were children, and we read Cervantes and Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Yes or no? And Molière?
Yeah.
What do you mean? What do you mean? That's European.
Yeah.
And you speak English and I speak Spanish, which are European languages.
Yeah.
I don't speak Nahuatl.
Yeah.
Do you speak Navajo?
No.
Okay.
And I don't see my. Yeah.
So
exactly.
We are. Mexicans, we make fun of that. We used, when we go to Paris, the French used to, at the past, look for our feathers.
Yeah.
Say, okay, you are a Mexican, are you an Aztec? No.
Yeah.
This is the break. That's why Americans, by Americans now I mean the whole Western Hemisphere, we're global from the very beginning.
Yeah.
And for Mexicans today, even from modest, very modest origins, they play Beethoven.
Yeah.
They read classics. Well, but it's not new.
Yeah.
After the Mexican Revolution in 1919, mm-hmm. when Mexico was extremely poor, very poor.
Yeah.
A wonderful minister of education, José Vasconcelos,
mm-hmm.
printed for the first time in Mexico, all the classics, Plato, Aristotle, Shakespeare, yeah. by the millions.
Yeah.
And of course, where people say, we're so poor and you are wasting money in printing and giving away for 10 cents
yeah.
these books. And he said, Plato, Socrates are Mexican.
Yeah. It's,
okay.
Yeah.
And our great artists, the Mexican Revolution of 1910
yeah.
was the first revolution of the 20th century that not only did not eject their artists and intellectuals, but brought them back.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Yeah? Diego Rivera, Siqueiros,
yeah.
They were in Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
And the revolution brought them. And they were communists, by the
yeah.
way. Members of the
yes.
Communist Party.
It's,
you see?
It's amazing.
That's globalization.
Yeah, yeah.
In 1920, the leading Mexican painters were brought from Paris by the government
yeah.
and were members of the Communist Party
yeah. yeah.
for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, yeah.
Frida Kahlo, now so popular,
yeah.
was homaged at her death at the National Palace of Fine Arts.
Yeah.
Her coffin wrapped in the communist flag.
Yeah.
In Mexico in the 1940s,
wow.
50s.
Yeah.
This is globalization yeah. for us. For it's you true. As Americans and we as Mexicans or Argentinians.
Yeah. It's amazing that those artists I'm very interested in that story of the muralists and so forth. It also reminds me I know there are many, but one particular contemporary artist, Gabriel Orozco,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, I find him so interesting.
Fantastic.
He works, you know, he's all around the world. I feel like when I look at his work,
yeah.
I learned something about Mexico and Mexican culture, and also something about London, Paris, New York, and as well as, of course, his own mind. This kind of comfort and fluency across—it's quite remarkable.
Of course,
yeah.
And the marvelous—I just referred to that in one of my lectures here. The fantastic dialogue between Octavio Paz, the great Mexican poet, and Suzuki, one of the masters of yeah. Zen Buddhism.
Yeah.
40 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trying to communicate very successfully.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you imagine Mexicans discussing Zen Buddhism? Yes.
Yeah.
And not yesterday, before
yeah.
Google. And before
yeah.
So we in the Western world are discoverers, all of us.
Yeah.
Descubridores.
Yeah.
We're all conquistadores.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
We came from ancestors who were traveling, men and women.
Yeah.
Women are very important on this. Today, it's culture and education in all the Western Hemisphere is mainly in the hands of women.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's be prepared for that.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm?
Government, too, is yeah. moving that way.
Yeah.
But educational culture is, and health.
Yeah, yeah.
An enormous female presence, which
yeah.
is good.
Absolutely.
And welcome.
Yeah.
But is that no? Well, yes and no.
Yeah.
The most famous, most important, and famous at the time, poet of the Spanish language of the Baroque period was a Mexican nun, Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz. Mexican
yeah.
and nun.
Yeah, yeah.
And is the most famous
yeah.
Poet of the Spanish language of the Baroque period.
Yeah.
She, her cell in the convent was two stories high. He had a kitchen.
Yeah.
She had maids.
Huh? Wow.
And she organized all the parties, literary parties and concerts at the Palace of the Viceroy.
Wow. It's amazing.
Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Great poet.
That reminds me, I also wanted to ask for those of us in the United States who may want to learn more about the history and culture of Mexico. I know there was one author a number of years ago who there were these several books by Jorge Castaneda,
yes,
all about, you know.
He's still there.
Oh yeah, okay. But he's been writing for many years. I was curious if you could recommend, if there's one or two or a few books you would say, here, if you're in the United States and you want to read something to understand a little bit better about Mexico, if there's some book.
Read Jorge Castaneda.
Yeah.
Read Héctor Aguilar Camín.
Okay.
Jorge Castaneda and Héctor Aguilar Camín, like 3 years ago or four, traveled together,
yeah,
all Mexico.
Yeah.
The entire country.
Yeah.
Talking to middle class people.
Yeah.
And they came out with a fantastic result.
Yeah.
They would be greeted. They are famous people.
Yeah.
And they have a good lunch, as Mexicans we eat,
yeah,
all the time.
Yeah.
And drink.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us how you feel Mexico is. Oh, a disaster. Oh, terrible. Politics are very bad. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. And your personal life? Oh, I've been very lucky.
Yeah, yeah.
My wife is doing fine.
Yeah, yeah.
My girl is already at the university.
Yeah.
My job, my business is very good. But they found that.
Yeah.
A final decision. Politics are hell.
Yeah. Yeah,
but fortunately, my family is doing fine, or my city, or my company. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
It's a contradiction in the attitude
of
the people more than in the reality.
Yeah.
You see? And they published a lot of articles on that, saying, well,
yeah,
now we have, for instance, a government of the left.
Yeah.
President López Obrador was elected by the largest majority in the history of Mexican democracy.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah.
And he appears every morning on the mass media at 7 o'clock in the morning from the first day of his government, including Sundays.
Yeah.
And he answers all questions.
Amazing.
You see? So, and some of the questions, especially at the beginning, were terrible. And he asked them all, said, I don't know, let me find out. Or, yes, you are right, things are bad, things are... And he's a man who has been in politics for his entire life.
Yeah.
And now he's the president.
Yeah.
And this is important for Americans to understand, that now we have a progressive leftist government, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Nothing to be afraid of.
Well, so finally, I wanted to ask you also, I know you've been you've accomplished so many things, so many projects and museum.
I'm old.
but if you, I wondered, looking to the future, your, you know, future projects that you may be planning for the upcoming years, if you have anything.
The coming years.
Yeah.
Hopefully are going to be very few.
Okay.
Yes. We have to learn, and we're not taught this at school, to become old.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Western civilizations. They never tell you.
Yeah.
Not even at the university, that you're going to be old.
Yeah.
I have just retired.
Yeah.
I have been retired for 6 months from all my professional activities.
Yeah.
I should be playing golf, but I don't play golf.
Oh, what will you do if you don't play golf?
That's a good question. I'm in Texas.
Okay.
But it's the... Why? Because I am 75 years old.
Yeah.
Unfortunately...
You've earned a rest.
Still alive. But my next occupation is death.
Yeah.
I'm prepared for it.
Yeah. That's good.
And I come from a very old and distinguished civilizational roots of the Catholic Church and of Spain.
Yeah.
You see? When I was young, as you are, and I'm a historian, so I would read history and say, why do kings retire to monasteries when they're old?
Yeah.
Why do queens used to leave all their power and go?
Yeah.
To Jerusalem.
So yeah.
Now I understand why.
Yeah.
You have to prepare yourself for that transit.
Yes. Yes.
You see, and it's a complex matter.
Yeah.
It has to do with your daily routine. We were trained to work,
yes,
to labor.
Yes. Yes.
as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, more work. Okay. I know I was one of the, I belong into the generation of the flower power and all this, and the hippies, okay, I have to go back to that.
Yeah.
Said, okay, what is the attitude? And of course, the closest references I find are in Asia.
Yeah.
The Chinese, the Indians from India, have a great concern for this.
Yeah.
The Chinese have always been very interested in old age.
Yeah.
Huh? And what you do when you are old.
Yeah.
In terms of labor, I was extremely happy to let the young people I trained to take over. It was extraordinarily grateful for me.
Yeah.
Because fortunately, I have trained many, many good professionals. I've been a professor all my life.
Yeah.
So when I retired, I felt, I'm leaving this in good hands. And it's true.
Yeah.
So this is what I do now. And I hope it doesn't last too long.
Yeah.
I don't want to be ill.
No.
And healthy.
Yeah.
I don't want to be half dead in a hospital yet. Surviving just for the fact of wearing kidneys from somebody else.
No, not a kidney.
So that is my task, and that's why receiving the undeserved award of the Rick Bretel recognition has been and is going to be for me a grandiose finale.
Oh,
and I thank you for being interested in what I do.
Well, on behalf of UT Dallas, we are enormously grateful to you. Ambassador Jorge Alberto Lozoya has been our guest today on the Athenaeum Review podcast. Thank you for speaking with me.
My pleasure.